This is Jen Rowland from the HorseTrainingJournal.com, and I have with me on the line someone that's played a major role in setting the structure and the standard of today's pleasure horses, Cleve Wells. Hey, Cleve, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I know you've had a really busy day.
Well, Jen, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and we're looking forward to getting our clinics going and so we can help everybody and get the new 2010 show season off to a great start.
Oh, awesome. I'm so excited. Okay, I've got a little cheat sheet here in front of me of some of the things that you've done to help educate people and your accomplishments in the show ring. Gosh, it's really amazing when I'm looking at this of everything that's happened through the years. If you don't mind, I'd just like to share a few things for those listening who maybe are new to the pleasure horse industry or the quarter horses and maybe aren't familiar with your resume. If you would, just jump in if I don't have my facts straight. You've had an amazing show career that started back in the 80s, and it still continues today with a total of 21 AQHA World and Reserve World Champions and 26 Quarter Horse Congress Champions. And that doesn't even count the paint horses and some of the other breeds. You've trained and shown to World Championships some of the most influential stallions in today's pleasure bloodlines, some horses that went on to become really famous, like Zips Chocolate Chip, Radical Rodder, Chips Hot Chocolate, Hot Rod and Zippo, and Zippo Can Do. And then also some of our industry's greatest all-time performers, such as Zippo's Amblin Easy, Mr. Magnolia Zip, and Zippo's Aaron. Weren't there a couple of those horses also that went on to win world championships in the open, the amateur, and the youth?
Yeah, Jen, one of my most favorite horses, he was a black gelding. His name was Zippo Silent Night. He was owned by Cheryl Allen from Arlington, Washington. And she won the amateur world on him. Her daughter, Raylan, won the youth world. And then I came back and won the junior on that horse also. So that was quite a feat for this horse. And set another record for the industry. And he was really, really a nice horse.
Oh, man. I don't think there's many horses that have gone on to accomplish that. But not only have you trained some of the most influential horses of our times, you've also made a huge impact in training people to become champion horsemen and women. Your program has really helped so many people achieve success. To my knowledge, you put on one of the first Western Pleasure clinics that people could bring their own horse and participate in. I'll never forget when I was flipping through the journal and saw the ad for that clinic when you first started doing that. I just thought, I'd never heard of anything like that. And then, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Well, there's one horse that I'd thought of kind of backing up and a horse that definitely needs to be mentioned and honored in our industry is a One Red Hot Zip. And I won the world on this horse as a two-year-old, and then I hauled Misty Hare to win the youth world on this horse, and then also had Zippo's Ambolese Reserve that year. But One Red Hot Zip, he went on to win the Western Riding World for Katie Good, and he was Reserve World Champion a couple of times in the Pleasure, and was a very, very unique individual himself. You can mention One Red Hot Zip whether you're in the United States or Canada or Italy, and people know who this horse is. And One Red Hot Zip, along with several of the other horses, you know, they're in the NSB Hall of Fame and well deserved of that title for them.
Oh gosh, I remember watching him. He was amazing. I had forgotten about him on my list of those horses. Yeah, he was awesome to watch.
He was very good. But getting back to your, you know, the clinics and stuff, you know, when you and I got together, you know, that's one thing that brought us together was I came up through 4-H programs and FFA and showing cattle, and, you know, I bought one of my first horses at a feed store. You know, years ago they used to have horses tied out in front of the feed stores for sale, and I remember, you know, buying this Appaloosa mare, and I had to ride her home. You know, it was the only way to get her back. But, you know, so we all start someplace, and I've got pictures of, you know, doing the 4-H parades and, you know, doing different thing, agricultural things with the animals and cattle and stuff. But, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at today had people not volunteered their help to share their knowledge. And you know, I went to clinics of Dave Golden and Al Dunning and you know, several other, you know, I would hear people. I lived in Lufkin, Texas, so I was a couple hours from A&M in College Station. So they would put on clinics all the time, and, you know, I'd drive over there, you know, after I got my driver's license, and that's where I came from. I came from the Western Horseman magazine and Horse and Rider, and, you know, it was the trainers who shared the facts of training and that I followed and built a program from that gave me my start. And I think not only myself, but I think every professional, you know, has a duty to give back. You know, the things that we're doing today, you know, some of it, you know, has evolved in time, but a lot of it is things that have been passed on from one generation trainer to another. So it's not like my program. This is not like, you know, the Cleve Wells program. This is a little bit of Al Dunning, a little bit of Bobby Avila, a little bit of everybody whom I have taken bits and pieces from. And what I have done is I made them fit my style of riding and to fit what I like to see a horse do. And in return, it's been successful in the show pen, so therefore that makes it a successful and good program. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it takes the professionals that are willing to make themselves accessible and to the public and to give back and at least offer themselves to the public and everything that they know with open arms and say, here it is. And that's what Shane and Rusty and myself, that's what we're going to do on March the 6th, is we're going to offer ourselves and our program to the world.
Gosh, you've more than made yourself accessible. I remember when I'd answer the 800 number and people would have a question, I'd call you and you'd say, well, just give them my cell phone number. And people couldn't believe it. You've gone beyond, you know, the call of duty a lot of times that I know of personally, helping making yourself accessible.
This is what we do. You know, it's partly what we do, and it's not a job. It's a life. It's a lifestyle, and you know, it's what you love. It's a passion, and, you know, whether I was a professional or not, I'm going to have a dog, and I'm going to have a cat, and I'm going to have some livestock, cattle, and horses. You know, I'm going to be around it. You know, I believe anybody out there who's ever been to a clinic or a seminar, whether I've done, you know, around the equine industry, they always know that at every clinic, at the end of every clinic, I've always given my cell phone number out, because the last thing I want to do is to fly off and spend a few hours trying to help people and leave them with any confusion whatsoever. And I said, you know, the biggest thing is what we show you, whether it be on March the 6th between Rusty and Shane and I, or one of the past seminars or clinics that I've done. The last thing we want to do is get you and your horse confused. So I don't ever want to be known for that trainer that flew off and they told me this and told me that, and then I went home and I'm in a bind and I don't know what to do. And I always tell people, you always pick up the phone and you call Cleve Wells. Here's my cell phone number. Day or night, you get binded up, give me a call, we'll work it out.
Uh-huh. And it doesn't, when I've asked you questions, you've always answered them, you know, big, you know, maybe beginner to, I remember when I first met you, I was having problem with this mare just taking off the bucket, and you know, you didn't make me feel like it was a small question or anything else, and you answered my question. I didn't ever have the problem anymore. So little things, it might be a little thing to you, but it sure makes a difference to the people at home.
Yeah, but it's hard. There's no doubt it's hard for horse trainers, no matter what level you're on. It's difficult, you know, to make some calls and some judgment calls and the training that we have to do. But, you know, we want to make ourselves accessible, because a lot of times figuring a problem out is just having the opportunity to conversation the problem. And once you conversation the problem, the answer usually comes to you. And sometimes, you know, more times than not, the people who would call me they would call and they knew what to do. They just wanted to hear it from me, say, hey, you know what? That's okay. Try that. You know, call me again in a day or two. Let me know how it works. If that doesn't work, then we'll try something else. But, you know, we'll work through it, as best we can. And, you know, I've met a lot of good people. There's a lot of people out there that are doing a really good job with their horses, training and showing, that just need a little bit of guidance and a little bit of confidence to assure them that they are actually better than what they really realize they are. They just need someone to help them with their confidence.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's one thing I was going to to mention about you is whenever, and this is way even before I knew you, whenever you'd ride a horse into the show pen, like Congress, you would just stand out because you just have this confidence about yourself and the way you are with the horses. Was it always that way, or did that just kind of come to you as you got better training?
You know, I'll tell you something I did, Jenny. I grew up and I worked for Jerry Stanford and Marty Johnson. And then I hung around Mike Carter a lot. He gave me a lot of training influence. But I did not show a horse until I was ready. You know, I worked for Jerry Stanford for probably over 2 years before I ever showed a horse. So they made me train my own horse to show. I did not get the opportunity to show a finished horse. I had to make it before I could show it. So therefore, I knew my horse so well, I wasn't riding someone else's product that had been trained beyond my ability. And now, you know, that's part of showmanship. Sometimes is showing the air and confidence that maybe you don't have. But I've also been blessed to you know, show some of the greatest horses and haul some of the greatest and horses in the industry. And Ann Myers, you know, gave me one of my first starts with Zip's Chocolate Chip, and I always analyze him. I said, you know, I got to spend 3 years with the Michael Jordan of the equine industry. Uh-huh. Ann Myers sent me Michael Jordan to coach. And
uh-huh.
So I 3 years with that horse, and I learned more from that horse, as much from that horse as I had people. I learned what horses, how good horses work and good horses think and how good horses walk and how they live. And so that was a turning point in my career, was for Ann Myers to give me that opportunity to spend 3 years with such a unique individual early in my career to learn, the respect of the animal.
Oh, how old were you when you first got him?
Well, you know what? I think he's 25, so that would have been about 25 years ago. Like that. So without telling my
that's
age,
pretty good.
Well, you know.
But you were young.
That was quite a while back. That was before I had a gray hair, so we'll leave it there.
Oh, man, that must have been so wild to have that horse. I've heard so many times people talking about, like, when he would come in the ring and there was just, people didn't know what to do with him because there was nothing like him. He was the first great one you had, huh?
Right. And then I I got a couple of others. I got Fancy Career, and my amateur showed her to reserve world champion, and then I had a horse, Charmadette, won about $60,000 on her, won the first triple challenge of Tom Power's securities on her. And so, one good one, it kind of gives you the confidence that when you're looking for your next horse, at least you know what a good horse is now, or a great horse. So that's something that some people don't ever get the opportunity to know what a great horse is. So then when I went shopping again, from that point on after Zip's Chocolate Chip, I knew what good horses were. So it helped me raise my standard and maintain a standard of quality that helped my career. Plus, you can't ever take out, Jen, the customers and the customers that sent these great horses to me and trusted the program and had the confidence in us to haul their kids and haul their wives and amateurs and build the career that we've got, So it takes more than a horse. You've got to have the industry, the people, the customers, the whole system has to back you and support you, to be able to coach and be honored to ride horses like I've had the honor to ride.
Oh, yeah, that's so true. And that's really giving credit where credit is due there. So you got started training. Well, were you always kind of like a horse crazy kid, or how did?
Well, I got started. Yeah, I rode all my life, and all the way up. But I started training horses in the eighth grade. I rode horses for $50 a month, and they bought the feed. And I had two horses in training, so I was one of the few kids in the ninth grade toting a checkbook. And
wow.
And just kind of took it from there. I did get out of the horses for a couple of years, I kind of found boats and motorcycles and kind of that crazy 17, 18 years old, I found the lake finally and water skiing and doing some other stuff. But, the passion of the horses came back in a few years and I got back into it and never looked back. People say, well, don't you get tired? Don't you do vacations? And we do go on vacations. I have a family and so we do things, but, I jump off of a horse and I jump in my tennis shoes and we run on vacation. I run back and jump back in my boots and I'm back home now, I enjoy, my time. I tell everybody my arena is like my sandbox. That's where I play every day.
Yeah, I remember we'd work hard all day, shooting videos, and I'd be just wiped out, and you'd go jump on your reining horse to wind down, and that was how you relaxed, was just kept riding.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you mentioned, oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna, I didn't mean to, I was gonna ask you, you'd mentioned some of the people that had an influence on you, like when you were younger, was there, any particular person that really helped you kind of develop your training style? Was it kind of a combination of a lot of people?
I hate to really name people because actually, people are still helping me today. I still learn, hey, when Shane and Rusty and I get together and we ride at a horse show or something, or we get together and go to one another's house, it's just like, wow, the iron sharpens iron, but in the earlier times, I worked with a lady named Marty Johnson, whom at that time was married to Jerry Stanford, and they were both big influences. Marty was probably one of the hardest working people that I've ever been around. I don't know today if I could, I couldn't get up as early and stay up as late. She taught me the fundamentals and just so much patience and fundamentals about horses. And, I look at Gary Stanford, he, he had a big influence on his ability to show a horse and present a horse to the public. And Mike Carter taught me a lot about putting horses in bridles and riding one-handed. And because we started out, I kind of started out in the snaffle bit program. And then it's just, you know, every day for the rest of your life, you know, just like there's no finished horse, there's no finished horse trainer. You know, we're good, you know, we have good years, we have bad years, you know, we stumble, we get up, we dust off, and we move forward. And, you know, it's training a horse is like riding a bicycle. You know, you don't learn anything on that bicycle until you hit the ground. And you know, you learn from your mistakes. So, you know, sometimes, you know, all horse trainers will tell you that, you know, you learn from your mistakes and you narrow it down. You don't always know what to do, but you know what not to do.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you kind of work through the program and, you know, riding horses, there's a lot of opinion to it, and there's things that people like and people don't like, and there's certain things that trainers like, and there's certain things I like in my horses that other trainers don't like. And, you know, that's the cool thing about it is in a judge system, you're able to put something together and allow the horse to express his natural ability while you express some of your program, put your program in the horse. And you come out with your ability to show in a certain way and you present your program and you don't want all the horses looking the same and you don't want all the horses with the exact same head carriage and you don't want the horses with the exact same frame and top line. You know, I've always said when you have the same top line on every horse, you've had too much human influence, that every horse could be allowed to balance himself to a certain degree. For that individual's natural ability. So, you know, I kind of got off on your question there, but you know, there's just been a lot of influence, but a lot of horse influence and a lot of customer influence. You know, my customers are just awesome through the years but so are the trainers. You know, there's not many trainers that you can pick up the phone and say, hey, I need some help, you know, I'm off here a little bit. And, you know, they just say, hey, load up and come on, fly in, come on, got plenty of horses to ride, I've got time, you know. The equine industry is really, really it's a good family to belong to.
Yeah, that's what my grandfather always told me, and that I want to believe it's still true today, that if you're in trouble, you know, you can ask a horse person to help you. He would always say that. And I think that's still true.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you've really gone beyond trying and really tried to help people. And like we talked a little bit about how you first put on, you know, the clinics to help people. And then I was able to be a part of, thank you very much, by the way, when you put together your video program. And one of our goals was to let people in to your entire program and give them, you know, step by step from start to finish, you know, specific exercise to work with. And then Cleve, you were one of the first guys to put together, even in other industries that I had ever seen at that time, a monthly membership program to allow people even more access. And now you're doing this with the online clinics to give people access to the help that they need. And we've talked off and on through the years, and it seems you're always thinking of good things like that to give back and to help people learn to have greater success with their
horses. Well, there's plenty of horses out there to ride. And, you know, what we've got to do, like I've always told people in the past, I said, you know, I'd love to do business with every person who has an equine animal, but I know I can't. So my job is if you know, someone comes in and they look at my program or they look at Shane's program or Rusty's program or any other professional's program, they might or might not like that program or it might or might not suit them. Doesn't make it a bad program, doesn't make the trainer wrong, doesn't make the amateur wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just something, it's not the right mix. But a professional's job is if I can't help that person, then it is my job to get that person to someone who can help them. So, you know, I tell people I'm not for everybody. I can't be for everybody. Don't want to be for everybody. Nobody can play that role. Nobody is for everybody. And nobody can please everybody. But if they will tell me what they're looking for, then I know enough about the other trainers' programs that I can say, hey, I will personally set you up with this trainer or that trainer. I'll make a phone call, see if I can get you in over here, get you set up, because we want to keep people playing the equine industry. You know, we want to keep people playing horses. So, you know, that's my goal. I want to keep people learning. It has nothing to do with really maybe horse showing and being competitive. Some people do that, some don't. But everybody that rides a horse, even if you trail ride or it doesn't make any difference what you do with a horse. You would like to teach that horse something. People like to teach. They like to teach their dog to sit and shake hands, and they like to teach. And then they like bragging rights. Hey, look at what my horse can do. Hey, look at what my dog can do, you know, so people like that. So they do want to teach their animals, and they do want to show their animals. I tell people, I said, everybody shows their animals. They just may not show it in competition, but they show it to their wife or their kids, or their kids show it to their parents. Look what I taught the dog today. Or look what my horse can do. Look how much easier my horse is to catch. They're showing their horse. They're showing what they've done. They're showing it to someone. So I said, everybody shows their horse. They just don't all show in competition.
Well, and it also just makes you feel good just to accomplish something with them. You know, it makes it so much more enjoyable. And one thing I was thinking when you were talking about the different programs is, you know, sometimes I'll watch even different events, and if you can just pick out one thing that might make your day easier with your horse or make it worth the haul to the horse show, just one thing is worth spending the time to listen and to learn.
Exactly. I've always told people, I said, you know, I don't expect everybody to agree with me, but if you don't learn, but I promise you, you can learn from me. You can either learn from what I've done or you can learn from my mistakes. I said, if you don't learn what to do from Cleve, or Rusty or Shane, you can learn what not to do. You know, we're showing you what we do and what works for us. And that's all we're showing you is what works for us. And you pick and choose, you know, you pick what you want to try and you throw the rest of the way or you set it on the back burner. It might fit another horse at another time. It might fit you at another time with another horse. But it's only for you to pick and choose what you like. It's not really to be judged. It's to be siphoned through, and then you pick the pieces out, and then you go and put your personal program together, and you teach your horse the way that you like to teach your horse to do the things that you like for your horse to do.
I had it when I used to do a lot of your advertising. I had like a little list of things that I called them Cleveisms. And you had one that was about that you're only frustrated, and you can probably tell me because I won't remember it right, but you're frustrated when you run out of ideas. So, you know, sometimes you just need an idea and then take it and tweak it for yourself at home.
Yeah, there is no finished horse. There's no finished person. There's no finished horse. You know, there's not a person living that hadn't laid in bed and said, you know, man, I just, you know, what their horse is doing just drives them crazy. They can't go to sleep, you know. And there's times you lay in bed and you're like, yeah, man, everything's working great. There's other times you lay there and like, you know, in total frustration. But you're only frustrated if, you know, you can go to sleep if you said, hey, tomorrow I'm going to pick up that phone and I'm going to make me some phone calls and I'm going to call Shane Dowdy. I'm going to call Rusty Green. I'm going to call Cleve Wells, and we may all three give you different answers. That's good if we do. If we all give you the same answer, it's okay, but if we all give you different answers, then at least now you have three different things to try on your horse. And the more options you give your horse, the more chances your horse has to pick a procedure in which he likes to be trained by.
Uh-huh.
So part of our program is what we like to do, but part of the program is making it fit the horse.
And oh, yeah.
I've always told people, you know, if I'm teaching math, I don't care if we count oranges, apples, our toes, our fingers. I don't care what we count as long as 2 plus 2 equals 4. So everybody can get to the equation. As long as I hear 4, I don't care if you used your fingers, apples, oranges, bananas. I don't care how you got there. Just get to the right answer. So there's a lot of ways, and if you allow your horse to have that freedom to pick some of the methods in which they're going to come up with the end result, then you're going to get along with more horses. Because in the show pen, if you are competitive, we do have to kind of look the same. We are judged by the same rule book, and the NSBA has the same rules. So we all have to meet in the same arena, but we all got there in a little bit of different ways. We all chose our own path to get to that arena.
That's awesome advice. Well, like we talked about too, you've been here and you've seen the pleasure industry evolve, and you know, we talked about you played a major role in it. Do you feel that over time that the pleasure industry has changed for the better or worse? Or
again, I'll tell you what, these pleasure horses, they look awesome now. Now there's, you know, that being said, I know somebody's going to say, oh, yeah, but I was here, I was there. You know,
There's
bad golf games, there's bad tennis games, and, you know, there's, you know, it's according, but if you go to what I would consider an A-class event, the pleasure horses really look good. You know, you go to a C or D class, I don't care if it's cutting, raining, whatever you go to, it's not going to look real good, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not cutting that down. Maybe those people at that point in time in their career, maybe they're doing the best they can do with what they've got to do with. So I don't ever in any way cut anybody down for looking what we might call bad, because for them it might be good. You know, nobody starts out on top, and nobody starts out doing everything exactly right, you know. So you don't cut people down, you know, for looking bad. You know, I always say it's only bad as if you look bad. If I see you be bad and I come back and I see you 3 or 4 years later and you still look bad, then maybe that's bad. But you know what? If I see you bad today and next year I see you getting better and I see you getting better and better, you know what? You're on the right path. You're getting better. You know, so everybody should show for their, you show for your own personal progress. Don't worry about what the rest of the world thinks or is doing. You own your horse. You show your horse. It's your program. You paid the entry fees. You do it your way and enjoy yourself, you know, and don't get caught up in the riffraff of the world, and don't start chasing your tail. You know, stay focused. But the pleasure horses at A-class events as a whole look awesome. That is partly to our breeders are doing an awesome job. What we're doing now, we're riding babies out of mares that showed. You know, most of the horses in my barn, their mamas were really good show horses. 10 or 15 years ago, we rode good bred horses, but the mamas maybe flunked out, but they were by great studs. But the mamas maybe went lame or flunked out, so they made her a brood mare. Well,
uh-huh.
Then you bred her to a good stud, but still half of the equation didn't ever get to the show pen. Now we've got the full equation, mamas and daddies that showed. Not only did they show, they gave longevity in the pen, and that is where our system is going up so high. You know, there's, it's one thing to come in and be successful on a horse, but one thing I always prided myself on was I showed most of the horses I showed them for 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 years. You know, Zippo Zambellese, we retired her. I showed her as a 2-year-old, was 10th at the Congress. I retired her a world champion at, I think she was 11 years old.
Man.
So you know that they like their job and that you're coaching them properly in order to maintain the longevity of the horse. But nowadays, I don't think we're as much trainers as we are coaches of talent. These young horses, and I think you'll see on March the 6th in that clinic, we're going to ride, you know, I don't know if we have any really good horses, but I know I have the horses that I'm going to show you I really enjoy working with. And I think the public will see that there is really some nice talent there in these young horses nowadays that even myself, I'm like, wow, you know, look what this horse can do so young and so early in his career with so little effort, you know, just coaching this horse. Wow, you know, it just cruises around.
I can't wait to see. They give us some things to compare, you know, myself anyway, to what I have at home. But you've not only been, you know, such a phenomenal, successful horse trainer, but you've also been an amazing trainer of other successful horse trainers and teaching your students to become champions in the show ring. This might be kind of a vague question, but I'm just curious, like when an amateur rider comes in, that's, you know, hasn't shown to that level before, are there, you know, do you have a specific things at home that you work on to help them become champion riders?
Well, you evaluate a person's, you know, ability, no doubt. I mean, a person does have to bring part of the equation. I always tell them, you know, there's three parts to this. So there's 33% horse, 33% trainer, 33% amateur. If me and the horse get it right, if we do our job perfect, that's at most 66%. That amateur's got to bring 20% or so to the table at least, you know. So, and guaranteed me and the horse are not going to be perfect. So the amateur's going to have to bring their fair share to the table of feel and talent and dedication and to the program. You know, it's easy to, you know, if I ask every amateur in the world, what do you want to do? I want to win the world. Well, everybody wants to win the world, you know. So I want to win the world. Everybody wants to win it. So you know, I'm like, okay. But what I like my amateurs to do is set realistic goals, because I want everybody to be able to pat themselves on the back. You can't beat confidence. So what I say is, okay, let's don't worry about the world show or none of that big Congress or NSBA world show or, you know, let's don't worry about that. You know what? Let's go and show and let's win. You know, let's work and let's produce, let's have good rides. And I promise you, if you'll have good rides, the judging system will come to you and it'll start pulling you out. So, you know, we work on acknowledging good rides, knowing what a good ride is, understanding the rules of right and wrong. This is right and this is wrong. Learning how to maneuver in the show pen, getting the right horse for the right rider. You know, just because a horse has a show record doesn't mean it's the right horse for that person. So, I don't want to make it really hard and detailed. That can almost be a clinic within itself, is picking the right horse for the right person. But I don't like to buy a horse with a resume for a person who I don't know. You know, when somebody says I want to get into this or I want to do this, I tell them, come to my house and ride. And what I want to do is see what kind of horse you need. And then I will buy the horse as best I can to fit the person. And then we move forward from there. And as that person becomes better, then I can move them up in horsepower or, you know, things like that. But usually you're looking at, if someone comes in and they've been showing some, let's say they just got out of novice, then to be a competitive amateur, they've got to have a fair amount of time to dedicate to it. And you're looking at about 3 to 5 years.
Uh-huh.
But you know, it's a lifetime. It's a lot of fun. You know, don't be in, I tell them, don't be in a hurry to get there, because I don't care what goals you set. You're gonna want to do it again and again, and then set higher goals. But set goals that you can accomplish, so that every now and then you can pat yourself on the back and go eat you a big steak and have a glass of wine and say, yes, I did it. I don't care if it's just like, first thing you got to do is maybe get your first AQHA point. You know, woohoo, got that? Okay, let's go have dinner. Next thing, I want to win a class. Okay, we get that. Next thing, I want to try to win a circuit. Ooh, you know, we do that. Next thing is I want to travel away from home, and I want to go to one of them big circuits I've always heard about and you know, go see the big time stuff, you know, so you keep inching up into it over time. And, but you have to have, you have to don't burn that confidence down by setting your sights too high too early.
Uh-huh. Is there, now for us at home, I've studied a long time, and I know a large percentage of our success in training and working with horses comes from a mental aspect. Are there mental qualities, since it'd be hard for you to coach all of us at home, but are there mental qualities that you suggest that we as people aspiring to reach levels with our horses, are there mental things that we can work on at home?
Well, you've got to know your horse. You know, you've got to know, and there has to be a relationship. I mean, you've got to know your horse, and your horse has to know you. And if you don't trust your horse, then why should your horse not trust you? And there is a nerves element. You know, I know everybody gets nervous when they ride in the show pen. I understand that. But at some point in time, you have to get over the nerves, and there has to be a clear thought process. And I tell people, until you can maintain a clear thought process inside the show pen, then we're kind of at a standstill.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll get at a certain level of show, they have that. And then they move to a bigger show, and they want to black out and get a little nervous on you out there in the pen. And you'll say, well, hey, did you do this or do that? And they'll be like, oh, man, I don't know, you know. I don't know. And I'm like, oh, you know, and I just kind of like, okay, you know, we had a little blackout out there. That's cool, you know, because we got you a little over your head and you panicked out there. Or you rode up behind one of those people that you've read about in the NSBA magazine or something, you know, and you got starstruck out there in the show pen. And so, you know, we understand that. That's part of the growing process. So, you know, you pat them on the back and say, hey, you know what? They put their pants on just like you. You go out there and whip them, and they're just as scared of you as you are of them, you know, and everybody pays the same entry fees. And, you know, so you give them that confidence. Go out there and get them, you know, you're as good as they are. And but you've got to get to where you have a very clear thought process inside the show pen, and that all of your muscles, from your ankles to your knees, your hips, all of your muscles stay relaxed, that you don't get to pushing and get tense. Because if you change your posture and you change your muscle tone inside the show pen, then you can't get mad when your horse makes changes.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're scared, he's scared. I always tell my horse, look, if I'm not scared, you don't be scared. If you feel me get scared, you better get scared. Because if I'm scared, everybody around me better be scared, you know. Because I'm, you know, maybe I see a snake or something. I'm like, man, I'm scared dead of snakes. I'll tell you, look, I'm scared, you better be scared. Because I'm fixing to leave you. I'm running. So you've got to give that confidence of relaxation of, hey, this ain't nothing, this isn't nothing, you know, just ride on through here, there's nothing to it. And I tell people, I say, if you're going to be nervous from your neck up. Think.
Uh-huh.
Do not let any nerves get below your neck.
Okay, that's awesome advice. That's really cool. Well, let's talk about the online live clinic. I wanted to thank you, by the way, for what you're doing with this, for me personally and for everybody else. I mean, it's really hard right now to get out and get to a clinic, and especially at this caliber of clinicians. This is amazing. And I know we touched on it earlier, but just in case anybody didn't catch that, Cleve is putting on a live online clinic with Shane Dowdy and Rusty Green, March the 6th at 2, and you can get all the details at www.westernpleasuretraining.com, and I'll make sure to put that link next to the link to this recording. I just couldn't believe it when you called me for, you know, to talk about this idea for this clinic. I was just like a little kid. I was just blown away. I was so excited at the prospect of learning from you guys at home. But how'd you come up with that idea?
Well, Janet, you know, it's been coming. You know, it's been coming. I've had the idea for a long time, and I've brought it up two or three times, and people, you know, they're like, oh, la, la, la. And I don't know much about the Internet. I have to have somebody get me to my website. I ride horses. I like horses. I ride horses. That's what I do. But I do know that it's through the technology is there to get out and help people. And there's no way, if I had a private airplane, there's no way I can leave Burleson, Texas today and reach the people that Shane and Rusty and I can reach on March the 6th and help. And with these online clinics, we can take teaching to a new level. You know, I mean, it's been cold up in the New England states and, mm-hmm. you know, I know they're wanting to get out and ride their horses and so, you know, you want to inspire everybody and give everybody, you know, a reason to get out there and dig out of that snow and, you know, go to brushing and saddling and riding your horses and, you know, let's get this season going 2010 and, you know, in Australia and in Germany and Italy and New Zealand and all over the world. It gives us the ability to help and bond together and learn and teach from one another. And uh-huh. this is really going to be an awesome deal. I'm excited about it. I wish it was tomorrow, because it's just a lot of times when I fly off, and I know the people out there that listen to this that have watched me do clinics and seminars and stuff. Sometimes it's really hard to prove your point or to own someone else's horse. You know, uh-huh. it's just very hard because it just doesn't look or fit right, you know. And
uh-huh.
and it's kind of like modeling someone else's clothes, you know. But with this clinic, Shane's going to be on his horse. Rusty's going to be on his horse. I'm going to be on my horse. We're going to be comfortable. We're going to be confident. We're going to tell you how we got there, what we do, and not only are we going to walk the walk, we can talk the talk with it because we're on our horses. Doesn't mean that everything's going to go perfect. We're going to show you that our horses are not perfect. You know, they're going to make mistakes on that day, and that's good. I hope they make a lot of mistakes so that we can show you how to correct the mistakes and how we ride, you know, in our daily lives. But when we show you, when we're riding our own horses, part of learning is learning what to do. The other part of learning is learning when the procedure has been accomplished and reach down and pet your horse. And so we can show you what to do, and we can also show you the correctness on our horses because we know our horse so well. And you're never, ever going to get as good a clinic when a clinician is demonstrating on other people's horses as you will when that clinician is demonstrating on his own stock.
Okay.
Because nobody wants to see me fix a horse. You know, I never have been the one, like, to show you what I can do on a horse in an hour. I'm not
uh-huh.
quick. I'm not fast. What I want to do is I want to give you something that you can hold on to for a lifetime, that you can use for
mm-hmm.
the rest of your life. I'm not trying to get, I have never done a clinic to prove my point. I have done clinics to teach, not to
uh-huh.
prove my point of my ability. So you know, what I want to do is we want to teach you what to do, how to do it, and when it's finished. You know, I see so many people, right, like for instance, I see people riding in draw reins, and I see them doing all this hoochie-goochie stuff in them, and I'm like, you know, draw reins are really good tools, but they're detrimental if you stay in them too long. So using the draw rein properly is the key. So in order to use it properly, you have to know what to do, but you have to know when to quit using it.
Mm-hmm.
And get away from it. And that's what a clinician can teach when he's riding his own horses, is when, hey, that's good. Reach down, pick your horse. Yes, that's good. That's bad. That's good. That's good. That's bad. That's pretty good. That's good. That's what you can show on your own horse that you don't really ever get to show when you're riding other people's horses, because the horse doesn't know you, you don't know him, and everybody's kind of, it's almost like you're faking a relationship out there.
Uh-huh.
Because neither one of you really, and that's the way it's had to be. I'm not cutting it down. That's the way it's had to be.
Yeah.
But with this internet, what I'm getting to in a long about way, with the internet program that I'm starting, you're going to get to see clinics, and I said with an S, you're going to get to see clinics that show correctness, that show positive training with correct procedure to know how to do it, when it's done, reach down, pet your horse. And I call that full circle training. You have a procedure, you engage the procedure, the horse performs the procedure, you reach down, pet the horse. That's request, respond, reward. That's full circle training. That is going to be what is so cool about the internet clinics.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh, I can't wait to see it. Now, we decided that we would let people decide what they wanted to hear from the clinic by sending in their questions. And now that you've had a chance to look over the questions, can you let us in now on the topic and what we can expect to learn?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to give you a little sneak preview. I'm not going to give the whole thing away. And we don't have Rusty and Shane with us today, so I don't want to speak too much for them. But I do know the topic. And from the questions, Shane and Rusty and I got together, and we read over the questions. And I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time to send the questions in. And we were just overwhelmed with the response of the questions but in just to put it simple, there are three or four parts to a horse. You've got the back end, you've got the front end, you've got the head and neck, you've got the back, you know, get a horse's back up and the rib cage and stuff. So we like to keep things simple and think that every horse, the problem they're having is within the neck, the shoulders, or the rear end, or the back. So,
mm-hmm.
So what we came up with is, in order to fix something, you have to have the ability to move it around. You have to have control of the back end. You have to have control of the front end. You have to have some control of the head and neck. Without control of the parts of the horse, you can't put the horse together. You can't train the horse. You can't say, my horse is broke. That's like driving up to your mechanic shop and saying, my car is broke. Well, what's wrong with it? I don't know. The car is broke. Well, you got to give him an idea. Is it the rear end? Is it the motor? Is it the front end? Is it, you know, mm-hmm. is there a rattle in the glove box? So the general consensus is people, you know, definitely are having some problems out there. But in order for us to become an equine mechanic, we've got to get, and to get this clinic program started, we've got to start with the basics and fundamentals. I mean, there's absolutely no way around that. And that's what we all came up with is if you can't fix the hock, if you can't control the back end. So don't try to control the horse. Control a part of the horse. And once you get control of, you can't control 4 feet if you can't control 2 feet. So let's control. So we're going to show you how to break this horse down into pieces in what I call do piece work. And it's kind of like whether you want to call it going to the gym. You don't work your whole body when you go to the gym. You do piece work. And you don't do too, and you don't do too much of it. You do enough. And so we're going to teach them kind of how to get their horses out and do piece work. We had questions about the young horses, a lot of young horse questions. And then we had questions about some of the older horses and some exercises to do with the older horses and things like that. So there's a wide range of questions, but it all comes back to fundamentals, basic fundamentals of any athletic program. Before they have a game, they do stretches, they do sit-ups, their body has to be limber, there has to be a warm-up. And a lot of times, if you just go out, you can't just put the suit on and go play football. You can't just put the suit on and go run track. There has to be stretches, there has to be maneuvers. You've got to get the body parts in the right frame in order to perform the maneuver. Every maneuver has a position, and the closer to correctness that you can get that position, the easier the maneuver is. So what you do is you have to teach a horse position. There's a position to lope off. There's a position to trot off. There's a position for a lead change. There is a position for a stop. And so if you have the ability to put your horse in the proper position, then some of the problems they think they're having, a lot of the problems they think they're having, are going to go away out of more body control, which sets a more finessed body position, which makes the maneuver more simple. And if it's more simple, the horse is going to like it, and they're not going to run from it or be trying to get away from it as bad. So in a roundabout way, we're going to start with the fundamentals of position and teaching position and body control, and we're going to teach several different ways of doing it. Hopefully, we've all got little different ways of training, but we're really gonna do our best to help everybody get from their 2-year-olds to the 10, 12, 15-year. Doesn't make any difference how old your horse is. As a matter of fact, the older your horse gets, the more you better revert back to things you did when he was 2 to keep that horse pliable, because pliability, it's like we all know, as we get up in age, pliability is what keeps you from getting hurt. Pliability will keep you from going to the vet, and you won't spend near as much money at the vet clinic if you maintain flexible and pliable horses.
Okay, gosh, I am so excited to learn all that. Well, I know it's getting late, and I know you've had a really busy day. I just want to thank you so much for taking this much time with me. And I'm so looking forward to the clinic. You can bet I'll be taking notes with everybody else. But I wanted to thank you also for making yourself and the other big name trainers accessible for us to learn from. I personally want to learn from the best, and I want to thank you for making that possible for us.
Well, like I said before, Jen, it's our pleasure, not only Shane and Rusty and myself, but I think I'll speak for every professional of every discipline in the industry. I really think that they're out there to help, and they should be. And after we do our clinics, I'm going to be very accessible to any problems that people get into. I know Shane and Rusty both will. We will be giving email addresses. We'll give phone numbers. We're going to do the clinic, but that's not the end of it. This is the opportunity for you to see us and maybe even pick. You might like the way Rusty does certain things. What we want you to do, we're going to come into your living room, and we want you to feel comfortable when we're done to pick up the phone and call us by first name. Hey, Rusty, this is so-and-so, you know, from Australia, and I've got a question. And that's what we want to do, you know. That we want you to understand that without the customer, there is no business. And, and so, you know, the customer, we're here to be used. Use us. Ask us. Work us. You know, we're here. You know, we're here to help you. When we give out our phone numbers, when we give out our email addresses, when we give out the shows that we're going to be at and tell you to come by and visit, those are not just cheap words. I think that myself and the other professionals, we really mean it. You know, we weren't born this way. You know, we came out, we worked hard, we've had good customers, good horses. We're no different than anybody else. We all feel lucky and blessed, and we still pinch ourselves every day like, wow, can you believe that I get to ride these good horses every day and go to horse shows and compete in futurities and competitions and stuff? I mean, it's living a dream. So, you know, we want to make everybody else's dream come true also as best we can.
Oh, man, thank you. Thank you so much for helping us. And again, thank you so much for your time.
Well, good luck, and I hope to we will tune in on March the 6th at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and I promise you won't regret it.
And you can get all the details on that at www.westernpleasuretraining.com. And if you sign up by the 5th, the clinic is only $20, so you can't even beat that. So thank you, Cleve, so much for your time, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Jen. Thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.